Parallel Warnings, Number 2. Unveiling the Prophetic Tapestry, Decoding the Messages of Revelation 14 in Millerite History and Today. When the parable of the 10 virgins was fulfilled in Millerite history, it took place during the second angel's message. The second angel's message represents two distinct messages, both in the period of time which they cover and in terms of the intended audience of the message. The second angel's message was directed to the Protestant churches that had just returned to Rome and became daughters of Babylon. The midnight cry was directed to the sleeping Millerites. The first message was directed outside of the Millerites. The second was directed inside. This will be fulfilled to the letter in our day. The difference that needs to be noted in the repetition of our day is that in the beginning of Adventism, the message of the second angel first went outside the Millerites, and then part two of the message went inside the Millerites. At the end of Adventism, when the parable is again repeated, so also is the second angel's message. We are told that directly more than a handful of times. But the twofold nature of the message is reversed at the end. The first message goes to Adventism, and the second to those outside of Adventism. We are told that the work and message represented by the angel of Revelation 18 is a repetition of the second angel's message. The prophet says, "I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the Great is fallen, and is become the habitation of devils." Revelation 18:1. This is the same message that was given by the second angel. Babylon is fallen because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Revelation 14:8. What is that wine? Her false doctrines. She has given to the world a false Sabbath instead of the Sabbath of the fourth commandment, and has repeated the falsehood that Satan first told Eve in Eden, the natural immortality of the soul. Many kindred errors she has spread far and wide, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. Matthew 15, verse 9. When Jesus began his public ministry, he cleansed the temple from its sacrilegious profanation. Among the last acts of his ministry was the second cleansing of the temple. So in the last work for the warning of the world, two distinct calls are made to the churches. The second angel's message is, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she made all nations drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Revelation 14:8. And in the loud cry of the third angel's message, a voice is heard from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Revelation 18:4-5. Selected Messages, Book 2, 118. The message of the second angel at the beginning of Adventism is the same message as the message represented by the angel of Revelation 18, and in that warning there are two voices that proclaim a message. The first voice is proclaimed when the earth is lightened by his glory, and in verse 4 John heard another voice saying, Come out of her. In Millerite history, the call out of Babylon came first, and the message to the Millerites came second. In Revelation 18, it is the second voice, or second message, that addressed those outside of Adventism. Along with the declaration that there are two distinct calls made to the churches, we find that the two times Christ cleansed the temple at the beginning and ending of his ministry is also an illustration of the beginning and ending of Adventism. The beginning of Adventism illustrated a purification of the workers that helped in building the foundation that William Miller was used to establish. The foundation was completed at the conclusion of the second angel's message, for with the arrival of the third angel on October 22, 1844, the truths that make up the foundations of Adventism were made available to understand for those who are willing to hear. The work of building the foundation concluded at the climax of the history of the second angel, when two distinct calls were made to the churches. The first call was outside the Millerites, the second was for the Millerites. But another beginning that aligns with Adventism's beginning is the ministry of Christ when he cleansed his temple the first time. The prophetic illustration of the temple being cleansed is marking a purification at the beginning and end of his ministry. That in turn typifies a purification of Adventism at its beginning and ending. Christ's two temple cleansings align with the beginning and ending of Adventism, but his message was just for his covenant people who were in the process of forever divorcing themselves from God. The beginning of Adventism presented a message announcing the opening of the judgment, and the end of Adventism is announcing the end of judgment. Jesus cleansed the temple the first time and rebuked the Jews for turning his house into a den of thieves, but the second cleansing of the temple was among the last acts of his ministry. At the end of his ministry, he no longer told the Jews that they had made his father's house a den of thieves. He then told them that their house was left to them desolate. Meanwhile, worshippers from every nation sought the temple, which had been dedicated to the worship of God. Glittering with gold and precious stones, it was a vision of beauty and grandeur, but Jehovah was no longer to be found in that palace of loveliness. Israel as a nation had divorced herself from God. When Christ, near the close of his earthly ministry, looked for the last time upon the interior of the temple, he said, "Behold, your house is left unto you desolate." Matthew 23:38. Hitherto he had called the temple his father's house, but as the Son of God passed out from those walls, God's presence was withdrawn forever from the temple built to his glory. Acts of the Apostles 1:45. The temple he cleansed at the beginning was a different temple than what he cleansed at the end. The first temple was his father's house, but the second temple was the Jews' house. The Lord entered into covenant with Adventism at the beginning, and Adventists became priests in his temple. At the end of Adventism, they are to be no more priests, and their house will be desolated. The second angel represents two messages. This is one reason the message is represented as Babylon falling twice. This is not the primary reason for the twice repeated announcement of Babylon's fall, but is one reason. How is it two messages? The second angel arrived in response to the rejection of the first angel's message. When the failed prediction, identifying 1843 as the conclusion of the 2300-year prophecy, took place, the Protestant churches used the erroneous message to reject Miller's message. Miller's message was the first angel's message. At its rejection, the Protestant churches, who had been God's church in the wilderness for over 1260 years, were rejected and became a daughter of Babylon. At that point, the second angel arrived with his message. There are some very important points involved with the various elements of this history we are considering. There is at least one point that must be developed slowly, for it definitely contributes to the understanding of the message of the revelation of Jesus Christ that is currently being unsealed. For this reason, I am including a very important passage about that history. It's two chapters that I am pointing to. But there is also a third important chapter in the middle of those two chapters. I am not including this at this time in order to limit the scope of our consideration. Notice which angel is being addressed as you read through. Look for the progressive testing process. Note in the first paragraph that the prophetic characteristics of the angel of Revelation 18 are also the characteristics of the first angel. Notice that to crucify one of the messages is to crucify Christ. And notice that the three angels are all presented as single angels, but the midnight message is a multitude of angels. I was shown the interest which all heaven had taken in the work which had been going on upon the earth. Jesus commissioned a strong and mighty angel to descend and warn the inhabitants of earth to get ready for his second appearing. I saw the mighty angel leave the presence of Jesus in heaven. Before him went an exceedingly bright and glorious light. I was told that his mission was to lighten the earth with his glory and warn man of the coming wrath of God. Multitudes received the light. Some seemed to be very solemn, while others were joyful and enraptured. The light was shed upon all, but some merely came under the influence of the light and did not heartily receive it. But all who received it turned their faces upward to heaven and glorified God. Many were filled with great wrath. Ministers and people united with the vile and stoutly resisted the light shed by the mighty angel. But all who received it withdrew from the world and were closely united together. Satan and his angels were busily engaged in seeking to attract the minds of all they could from the light. The company who rejected it were left in darkness. I saw the angel watching with the deepest interest the professed people of God to record the character they developed as the message of heavenly origin was introduced to them. And as very many who professed love for Jesus turned from the heavenly message with scorn, derision, and hatred, an angel with a parchment in his hand made the shameful record. All heaven was filled with indignation because Jesus was slighted by his professed followers. I saw the disappointment of the trusting ones. They did not see their Lord at the expected time. It was God's purpose to conceal the future and bring his people to a point of decision. Without this point of time, the work designed of God would not have been accomplished. Satan was leading the minds of very many far ahead in the future. A period of time proclaimed for Christ's appearing must bring the mind to earnestly seek for a present preparation. As the time passed, those who had not fully received the light of the angel united with those who had despised the heavenly message, and they turned upon the disappointed ones in ridicule. I saw the angels in heaven consulting with Jesus. They had marked the situation of Christ's professed followers. The passing of the definite time had tested and proved them, and very many were weighed in the balance and found wanting. They all loudly professed to be Christians, yet failed in following Christ in almost every particular. Satan exulted at the state of the professed followers of Christ. He had them in his snare. He had led the majority to leave the straight path, and they were attempting to climb up to heaven some other way. Angels saw the pure, the clean, and holy, all mixed up with sinners in Zion and the world-loving hypocrite. They had watched over the true lovers of Jesus, but the corrupt were affecting the holy. Those whose hearts burned with a longing, intense desire to see Jesus, were forbidden by their professed brethren to speak of his coming. Angels viewed the whole scene and sympathized with the remnant who loved the appearing of Jesus. Another mighty angel was commissioned to descend to earth. Jesus placed in his hand a writing, and as he came to earth, he cried, "Babylon is fallen. Then I saw the disappointed ones again look cheerful and raise their eyes to heaven, looking with faith and hope for their Lord's appearing. But many seemed to remain in a stupid state, as if asleep. Yet I could see the trace of deep sorrow upon their countenances." The disappointed ones saw from the Bible that they were in the tarrying time and that they must patiently wait the fulfillment of the vision. The same evidence which led them to look for their Lord in 1843 led them to expect him in 1844. I saw that the majority did not possess that energy which marked their faith in 1843. Their disappointment had dampened their faith. But as the disappointed ones united in the cry of the second angel, the heavenly host looked with the deepest interest and marked the effect of the message. They saw those who bore the name of Christians turn with derision and scorn upon those who had been disappointed. As the words fell from the mocker's lips, "You have not gone up yet," an angel wrote them. Said the angel, "They mock God." I was pointed back to the translation of Elijah. His mantle fell on Elisha, and wicked children or young people followed him, mocking, crying, "Go up, thou bald head! Go up, thou bald head!" They mocked God and met their punishment there. They had learned it of their parents. And those who have scoffed and mocked at the idea of the saints going up will be visited with the plagues of God, and will realize that it is not a small thing to trifle with him. Jesus commissioned other angels to fly quickly to revive and strengthen the drooping faith of his people and prepare them to understand the message of the second angel and of the important move which was soon to be made in heaven. I saw these angels receive great power and light from Jesus and fly quickly to earth to fulfill their commission to aid the second angel in his work. A great light shone upon the people of God as the angels cried, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." Then I saw those disappointed ones rise, and in harmony with the second angel proclaim, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh, go ye out to meet him." The light from the angels penetrated the darkness everywhere. Satan and his angels sought to hinder this light from spreading and having its designed effect. They contended with the angels of God and told them that God had deceived the people, and that with all their light and power, they could not make the people believe that Jesus was coming. The angels of God continued their work, although Satan strove to hedge up the way and draw the minds of the people from the light. Those who received it looked very happy. They fixed their eyes up to heaven and longed for the appearing of Jesus. Some were in great distress, weeping and praying. Their eyes seemed to be fixed upon themselves, and they dared not look upward. A precious light from heaven parted the darkness from them, and their eyes, which had been fixed in despair upon themselves, were turned upward, while gratitude and holy joy were expressed upon every feature. Jesus and all the angelic host looked with approbation upon the faithful, waiting ones. Those who rejected and opposed the light of the first angel's message lost the light of the second, and could not be benefited by the power and glory which attended the message, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh." Jesus turned from them with a frown. They had slighted and rejected him. Those who received the message were wrapped in a cloud of glory. They waited and watched and prayed to know the will of God. They greatly feared to offend him. I saw Satan and his angels seeking to shut this divine light from the people of God. But as long as the waiting ones cherished the light and kept their eyes raised from earth to Jesus, Satan could have no power to deprive them of this precious light. The message given from heaven enraged Satan and his angels, and those who professed to love Jesus but despised his coming scorned and derided the faithful, trusting ones. But an angel marked every insult, every slight, every abuse they received from their professed brethren. Very many raised their voices to cry, "Behold, the bridegroom cometh," and left their brethren who did not love the appearing of Jesus, and who would not suffer them to dwell upon his second coming. I saw Jesus turn his face from those who rejected and despised his coming, and then he bade angels lead his people out from among the unclean, lest they should be defiled. Those obedient to the messages stood out free and united. A holy and excellent light shone upon them. They renounced the world, tore their affections from it, and sacrificed their earthly interests. They gave up their earthly treasure, and their anxious gaze was directed to heaven, expecting to see their loved deliverer. A sacred, holy joy beamed upon their countenances and told of the peace and joy which reigned within. Jesus bade his angels go and strengthen them, for the hour of their trial drew on. I saw that these waiting ones were not yet tried as they must be. They were not free from errors. And I saw the mercy and goodness of God in sending a warning to the people of earth and repeated messages to bring them up to a point of time, to lead them to a diligent search of themselves, that they might divest themselves of errors which have been handed down from the heathen and papists. Through these messages, God has been bringing out his people where he can work for them in greater power and where they can keep all his commandments. As the ministration of Jesus closed in the holy place, and he passed into the holiest, and stood before the ark containing the law of God, he sent another mighty angel to earth with the third message. He placed a parchment in the angel's hand, and as he descended to earth in majesty and power, he proclaimed a fearful warning, the most terrible threatening ever born to man. This message was designed to put the children of God upon their guard and show them the hour of temptation and anguish that was before them. Said the angel, "They will be brought into close combat with the beast and his image. Their only hope of eternal life is to remain steadfast. Although their lives are at stake, yet they must hold fast the truth." The third angel closes his message with these words, "Here is the patience of the saints. Here are they that keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus." As he repeated these words, he pointed to the heavenly sanctuary. The minds of all who embrace this message are directed to the most holy place, where Jesus stands before the ark, making his final intercession for all those for whom mercy still lingers, and for those who have ignorantly broken the law of God. This atonement is made for the righteous dead as well as for the righteous living. Jesus makes an atonement for those who died, not receiving the light upon God's commandments, who sinned ignorantly. After Jesus opened the door of the Most Holy, the light of the Sabbath was seen, and the people of God were to be tested and proved, as God proved the children of Israel anciently, to see if they would keep his law. I saw the third angel pointing upward, showing the disappointed ones the way to the holiest of the heavenly sanctuary. They followed Jesus by faith into the Most Holy. Again they have found Jesus, and joy and hope spring up anew. I saw them looking back, reviewing the past, from the proclamation of the second advent of Jesus, down through their travels to the passing of the time in 1844. They see their disappointment explained, and joy and certainty again animate them. The third angel has lighted up the past, present, and future, and they know that God has indeed led them by his mysterious providence. It was represented to me that the remnant followed Jesus into the most holy place, and beheld the ark and the mercy seat, and were captivated with their glory. Jesus raised the cover of the ark, and behold, the tables of stone, with the Ten Commandments written upon them. They trace down the lively oracles, but they start back with trembling when they see the fourth commandment living among the ten holy precepts, while a brighter light shines upon it than upon the other nine, and a halo of glory is all around it. They find nothing there informing them that the Sabbath has been abolished or changed to the first day of the week. It reads as when spoken by the mouth of God in solemn and awful grandeur upon the mount, while the lightnings flashed and the thunders rolled, and when written with his own holy finger in the tables of stone. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord thy God. They are amazed as they behold the care taken of the Ten Commandments. They see them placed close by Jehovah, overshadowed and protected by his holiness. They see that they have been trampling upon the fourth commandment of the Decalogue, and have observed a day handed down by the heathen and papists, instead of the day sanctified by Jehovah. They humble themselves before God and mourn over their past transgressions. I saw the incense in the censer smoke, as Jesus offered their confessions and prayers to his Father. And as it ascended, a bright light rested upon Jesus and upon the mercy seat, and the earnest, praying ones who were troubled because they had discovered themselves to be transgressors of God's law were blessed, and their countenances lighted up with hope and joy. They joined in the work of the third angel, and raised their voices and proclaimed the solemn warning. But few at first received the message, yet they continued with energy to proclaim the warning. Then I saw many embrace the message of the third angel, and unite their voices with those who had first proclaimed the warning, and they exalted God and magnified him by observing his sanctified rest day. Many who embraced the third message had not an experience in the two former messages. Satan understood this, and his evil eye was upon them to overthrow them. But the third angel was pointing them to the most holy place, and those who had an experience in the past messages were pointing them the way to the heavenly sanctuary. Many saw the perfect chain of truth in the angel's messages, and gladly received it. They embraced them in their order, and followed Jesus by faith into the heavenly sanctuary. These messages were represented to me as an anchor to hold the body, and as individuals receive and understand them, they are shielded against the many delusions of Satan. After the great disappointment in 1844, Satan and his angels were busily engaged in laying snares to unsettle the faith of the body. He was affecting the minds of individuals who had a personal experience in these things. They had an appearance of humility. They changed the first and second messages and pointed to the future for their fulfillment, while others pointed far back in the past, declaring that they had been there fulfilled. These individuals were drawing the minds of the inexperienced away and unsettling their faith. Some were searching the Bible to try to build up a faith of their own, independent of the body. Satan exulted in all this, for he knew that those who broke loose from the anchor, he could affect by different errors and drive about with winds of doctrine. Many who had led in the first and second messages denied them, and division and scattering was throughout the body. I then saw William Miller. He looked perplexed and was bowed with sorrow and distress for his people. He saw the company who were united and loving in 1844, losing their love for each other and opposing one another. He saw them fall back into a cold, backslidden state. Grief wasted his strength. I saw leading men watching Wem Miller and fearing lest he should embrace the third angel's message and the commandments of God. And as he would lean towards the light from heaven, these men would lay some plan to draw his mind away. I saw a human influence exerted to keep his mind in darkness and to retain his influence among them. At length, Nubbler-Miller raised his voice against the light from heaven. He failed in not receiving the message which would have fully explained his disappointment and cast a light and glory on the past, which would have revived his exhausted energies, brightened up his hope, and led him to glorify God. But he leaned to human wisdom instead of divine, and being broken with arduous labor in his master's cause and by age, he was not as accountable as those who kept him from the truth. They are responsible, and the sin rests upon them. If Dom Miller could have seen the light of the third message, many things which looked dark and mysterious to him would have been explained. His brethren professed such deep love and interest for him, he thought he could not tear away from them. His heart would incline towards the truth, but then he looked at his brethren. They opposed it. Could he tear away from those who had stood side and shoulder with him in proclaiming Jesus' coming? He thought they surely would not lead him astray. God suffered him to come under the power of Satan, and death to have dominion over him. He hid him in the grave, away from those who were constantly drawing him from God. Moses erred just as he was about to enter the promised land. So also, I saw that Miller erred as he was soon to enter the heavenly Canaan in suffering his influence to go against the truth. Others led him to this. Others must account for it. But angels watch the precious dust of this servant of God, and he will come forth at the sound of the last trump. I saw a company who stood well guarded and firm, and would give no countenance to those who would unsettle the established faith of the body. God looked upon them with approbation. I was shown three steps, 1, 2, and 3, the first, second, and third angels' messages. Said the angel, "Woe to him who shall move a block or stir a pin in these messages." The true understanding of these messages is of vital importance. The destiny of souls hangs upon the manner in which they are received. I was again brought down through these messages and saw how dearly the people of God had purchased their experience. It had been obtained through much suffering and severe conflict. Step by step had God brought them along until he had placed them upon a solid, immovable platform. Then I saw individuals as they approached the platform, before stepping upon it, examine the foundation. Some with rejoicing immediately stepped upon it. Others commenced to find fault with the laying of the foundation of the platform. They wished improvements made, and then the platform would be more perfect, and the people much happier. Some stepped off the platform and examined it, then found fault with it, declaring it to be laid wrong. I saw that nearly all stood firm upon the platform, and exhorted others who had stepped off to cease their complaints. For God was the master builder, and they were fighting against him. They recounted the wonderful work of God, which had led them to the firm platform, and in union nearly all raised their eyes to heaven, and with a loud voice glorified God. This affected some of those who had complained, and left the platform, and again they with humble looks stepped upon it. I was pointed back to the proclamation of the first advent of Christ. John was sent in the spirit and power of Elijah to prepare the way for Jesus' coming. Those who rejected the testimony of John were not benefited by the teachings of Jesus. Their opposition to the proclamation of his first advent placed them where they could not readily receive the strongest evidence of his being the Messiah. Satan led on those who rejected the message of John to go still further, to reject Jesus and crucify him. In doing this, they placed themselves where they could not receive the blessing on the day of Pentecost, which would have taught them the way into the heavenly sanctuary. The rending of the veil of the temple showed that the Jewish sacrifices and ordinances would no longer be received. The great sacrifice had been offered and had been accepted, and the Holy Spirit, which descended on the day of Pentecost, carried the minds of the disciples from the earthly sanctuary to the heavenly, where Jesus had entered by his own blood and shed upon his disciples the benefits of his atonement. The Jews were left in complete deception and total darkness. They lost all the light they might have had upon the plan of salvation, and still trusted in their useless sacrifices and offerings. They could not be benefited by the mediation of Christ in the holy place. The heavenly sanctuary had taken the place of the earthly, yet they had no knowledge of the way to the heavenly. Many look with horror at the course the Jews pursued toward Jesus in rejecting and crucifying him, And as they read the history of his shameful abuse, they think they love Christ and would not have denied him like Peter or crucified him like the Jews. But God, who has witnessed their professed sympathy for his son, has proved them and has brought to the test that love which they professed for Jesus. All heaven watched with the deepest interest the reception of the message. But many who profess to love Jesus and who shed tears as they read the story of the cross, instead of receiving the message with gladness, are stirred with anger and deride the good news of Jesus' coming and declare it to be delusion. They would not fellowship those who loved his appearing, but hated them and shut them out of the churches. Those who rejected the first message could not be benefited by the second, and were not benefited by the midnight cry, which was to prepare them to enter with Jesus by faith into the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary. And by rejecting the two former messages, they can see no light in the third angel's message, which shows the way into the most holy place. I saw that the nominal churches, as the Jews crucified Jesus, had crucified these messages, and therefore they have no knowledge of the move made in heaven, or of the way into the most holy, and they cannot be benefited by the intercession of Jesus there. Like the Jews who offered their useless sacrifices, they offer up their useless prayers to the apartment which Jesus has left. And Satan, pleased with the deception of the professed followers of Christ, fastens them in his snare and assumes a religious character, and leads the minds of these professed Christians to himself, and works with his power, his signs and lying wonders. Some he deceives in one way and some in another. He has different delusions prepared to affect different minds. Some look with horror upon one deception, while they readily receive another. Satan deceives some with spiritualism. He also comes as an angel of light and spreads his influence over the land. I saw false reformations everywhere. The churches were elated and considered that God was marvelously working for them when it was another spirit. It will die away and leave the world and the church in a worse condition than before. I saw that God had honest children among the nominal Adventists, and the fallen churches and ministers and people will yet be called out from these churches before the plague shall be poured out, and they will gladly embrace the truth. Satan knows this, and before the loud cry of the third angel raises an excitement in these religious bodies, that those who have rejected the truth may think God is with them. He hopes to deceive the honest and lead them to think that God is still working for the churches. But the light will shine, and every one of the honest ones will leave the fallen churches and take their stand with the remnant. Spiritual Gifts, Volume 1, 151-172. This passage has so many important truths, but I am using the passage to isolate some characteristics of the messages of Millerite history in order to understand how those typify our history. All three of the angels of Revelation 14 have a message in their hands. The second and third angel are identified as having a parchment with them as they descend with their message. Each angel represents a message, and the arrival of each message causes an effect. We will continue this subject in the next article.